Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sparty Talk. The holiday feast here of Michigan State Spartans sports talk. Oh, well, we got more than that today. We're going to have a little hockey talk, pro hockey talk. We're going to have a little Red Wings talk. We're going to have a little little Lions talk. We're even going to have a little World Cup talk, and we're going to have a little Matt Ishbia talk. We got lots to talk about. I am Satchmo, and joining me for the discussion on Sparty Talk is the one, the only, the thin man, DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and happy holidays to all.
Yes, greetings and happy holidays to all. It is a veritable feast for us to talk about. But before we get to the feast, DB, feast to talk about, I've got just a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
What is your ideal Christmas dinner?
Oh, wow. Interesting. So growing up, there was a lot of things like ham, you know, and grandma made all sorts of different things. Casseroles and cookies and cake and everything like that. So if I could have Christmas dinner and keep it, you know, it would be that. But I think, you know, my horizons have expanded. So I've actually, Chinese food has been a welcome thing on Christmas Day.
Chinese food, yes. Chinese food, outstanding. I mean, that's become like the default Christmas meal for a lot of people. Where do you fall on the traditional Christmas dish of goose?
Oh, my God.
I'm just asking.
Well,
these are important questions.
Yeah. So I've never had that. And I'm not sure that I ever would. It's not something that I would have ever thought about eating.
Well, see, to me, that's interesting because, I mean, almost everyone I talk to hasn't had goose for Christmas yet. I mean, goose for Christmas, yet, you know, goose is, I mean, that's the traditional Christmas meal, goose.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's sort of passé now. I'm not sure.
Okay, so no goose. Where are you on, like, fruitcakes?
Oh, fruitcakes are very, very decorative. I have tried a fruitcake before, and they are horrific.
Okay. All right, so no to fruitcake. What is, then, if you're saying no to fruitcake, all right, what is the standard Christmas dessert for you? What is the pie of choice? What is the cake of choice? What is DB eating if he has to have such thing? And by the way, this is important, Spartan Nation, because pie talk is an important part of what we do here.
Well, we could do a whole podcast devoted to pie sometime.
I think we will. I think to start the new year, I think we will. But what is the Christmas pie of choice?
So I would say, you know, I mean, at Thanksgiving, of course, you have pumpkin. And it's not to say that couldn't be served. But I think about, you know, like pecan pie or, you know, like apple pie has been served at Christmas. At Christmas dinners, and you know, it varies for everybody, but you know, my grandmother would make so many different kinds of cookies that you could just sit there with some coffee or tea after the big dinner and eat that with eat, you know, an assortment of different cookies with for dessert.
Yeah, Christmas does feel more cookie-ish than pie. I mean, like, look, Thanksgiving is known for the pies, right? You got the pumpkin pie, the apple pie, the pecan pie. I feel like for Christmas, you have to go, like, more exotic and boozier with your pies.
Something with liqueur in it.
Yeah, something with a liqueur, something that warms the cockles of the soul.
Yeah, there's I've imbibed in the past on Christmas, a lot of wine flowing and things like that.
Yeah, well, wine is quality. and then the last sort of holiday question before we dive into, you know, the Michigan State talk, because we've got Michigan State football and men's basketball and women's basketball and Michigan State ice hockey. I mean, we've got lots of stuff to talk about. Are we pro or anti eggnog?
Well, personally, I don't really care for it, but I know a lot of people do. I think it's kind of a love hate with eggnog. I don't like it, but there are a lot of people who do like it, and then there's a lot of people who like to spike it. So
speaking of booze,
so that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, everyone should try it as long as they're able to. Don't have any allergies or anything like that, but you know, decide for yourself. Have you ever had eggnog?
I am pro eggnog, Phoebe.
Oh, okay.
I am pro eggnog, but I'm also a fan of not your run-of-the-mill crappy Swiss Miss hot chocolate, but luxurious hot chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
That is good stuff, not just at the holidays, but all winter.
All winter, yeah, but there's just something nice about it. You get the luxurious hot chocolate, and you get some Christmas cookies.
Yes. Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah, see, now we're talking.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. One thing that, you know, it's a shame that it can't happen anymore in East Lansing. But one thing that can't happen anymore in East Lansing, DB, is people can't get Gumby's Pizza, the Beast, and Pokey Sticks for Christmas anymore. It's closed down.
Oh, my goodness. When did that happen?
I don't know, but it's distressing.
Yeah, everything is gone.
Yeah. So people won't be eating the Beast or Pokey Sticks when they watch Michigan State men's basketball. I think they're playing Oakland University tomorrow.
Yep.
Rocket Watts reunion.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, there. Yeah, tomorrow. Tomorrow, 6:30. I mean, we're recording this, December 20th, 9 p.m., out live on blogtalkradio.com/Spartiana. But who knows when you're listening to it. You might be listening to it and the game's already over. We don't know. But let's talk a little bit about Michigan State men's basketball, DB.
Yeah.
Off to a reasonably good start. You can't complain too much.
Yes. I mean, despite the injuries, you know, they had the setback with, the Notre Dame game, you know, I mean, that was, they were ripe to be picked there. Also very tired after the traveling when they went out west and played in the Phil Knight, whatever that was, thing on Thanksgiving weekend. And then, the Northwestern loss at home almost could be expected. You run into a Northwestern team that plays good defense, and there you have a recipe without all of your players to get beat. But then the Spartans recovered a little bit, and they beat Penn State on the road. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, well, when you have both Aikens and Hall out due to injury, and you're only going seven deep as a team as it is, you got problems. You got issues, and it feels like the Northwestern game was completely expected. It feels like Northwestern has Michigan State's number to a certain degree, which is a weird thing to say, but seems to be the case. And it also felt like the Penn State game, the win over Penn State, which was a nice bounce-back win, despite the exhaustion, and Penn State seems to have a reasonably good basketball team, so this might end up looking and being a really good win when it's all said and done. They gutted that one out. They went on the road and beat a pretty good team. If they can just get healthy and stay healthy and develop a rotation. And I mean, this rest is going to do them all sorts of good. I mean, they haven't played since December 10th. They play tomorrow night, and then they don't have another game until the 30th. Against Buffalo. I mean, these are things, the rest, the practice, all of these sorts of things. This is where Michigan State improves by leaps and bounds. And I don't think Malik Hall is necessarily going to play in this game against Oakland. I think he's targeting the Buffalo game for a return. But even when he returns, we know this from history, DB. It takes 4, 5, 6 games to get your sea legs underneath you, maybe 7. So he's not going to have his sea legs underneath him for the Buffalo game. He's not going to have it for the Nebraska game. And he probably isn't going to have it for the Michigan game in the Breslin Center. But, you know, by the time Wisconsin, Illinois, maybe Purdue rolls around, you know, he should be rounding into better form, hopefully. We don't know. We'll see.
We don't know. Yep. That's right.
We'll see. By the way, we have to bring this up. Hunter Dickinson's a major tool, isn't he?
Yes. News to share about Hunter Dickinson?
Well, you know, he went on a Twitter or Twitter Spaces or whatever it is, and he talked about how everyone knows that you're at Michigan State because you couldn't get into Michigan.
Oh, jeez.
Right. And first of all, we know that's objectively false.
Right.
And the reason we know it's objectively false to me is one of us on this podcast got into the University of Michigan Engineering School and then tore off the acceptance letter in front of Michigan people and people that thought that Michigan was the only university in the state that people would go to.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very satisfying experience. That's right. Satchmo got into the University of Michigan. And he didn't just get into the University of Michigan. Satchmo got into the engineering school at the University of Michigan. And he said, no, 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 no. That's my best Dikembe Mutombo. No, 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 no. I'm going to Michigan State.
Yeah.
Best decision I ever made, DB.
You made the right choice.
Made the right choice. Hunter Dickinson doesn't understand that. He doesn't get that.
Yeah.
And now I feel like someone's just got to take a ball and shove it down his throat.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, he has a lot to say about a lot of different things. And it's funny because he's from Maryland.
Well, at least he knows them. He knows why people don't go to schools named U of M.
I mean, I'm sort of like sitting here kind of dumbfounded that he's saying these things because the guy went to DeMatha High School out here. Like, you know, I mean, he's been John at the Maryland bench for the last 3 years every time they play. You know, I don't know. He's got a lot on his mind, and I hope he, you know, didn't make the wrong choice by not going to the NBA already.
Well, let's face it. If he was ready for the NBA, DB, he'd be there.
I know. Yes.
Yeah. He didn't come back for love of school, DB.
Yes. Well, I will give him credit for that.
Yes, he made the right choice. Yes. He realized he was an inferior player and decided to stay with fellow inferior players.
And I don't know if the students will be back for the Breslin game, but I hope that they show up and they do their homework on Hunter Dickinson to let him have it.
Yes, well, I'm rather looking forward to that.
Yes.
It was very funny because, you know, Tom Izzo went off on a rant about how at least his kids still go to class and study. And everyone's like, where did this come from? And I'm just assuming he was talking about Hunter Dickinson.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then he pulled out his accordion, started playing.
Oh, okay. So this has to be, speaking of holiday traditions, DB.
Yeah, yeah.
This has to be one of the top three holiday college hoops basketball traditions of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of a better holiday tradition?
No.
Tom Izzo playing the accordion.
Bobby Knight ever did anything nice at the holidays.
Well, Bobby Knight, you know, wore those ugly red sweaters. Does that count?
He had ugly sweater day all year long at IU.
Give it up
to Tom Izzo that he plays the accordion. I was taken aback.
To me, it's just tremendous. It's a great holiday tradition. And the fact that he sounds as good as he does now compared to where he was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I mean, it's remarkable.
Yeah.
And his players love it.
Yeah.
Players love it. Fans love it. Yeah. It's part of what makes Izzo Izzo.
Yeah.
All right. While we're on Michigan State, how are we feeling about conference play upcoming? How are we feeling about getting into the NCAA tournament? How are we feeling about all of this right now?
Yeah, good questions. You know, conference play for Michigan State, but also a lot of teams, is going to be up and down. We've already seen a little taste of it, you know, just with the Spartans and then, you know, some other teams. I feel like, you know, like you said a few podcasts ago, it's very much eyes wide open and let's just see what happens, because I don't know.
It feels kind of like a 500 basketball season, dude.
Yeah.
And I say that because it's going to be a grind, and you're going to get into foul trouble, and you're going to get injuries, and you're going to get tired, and Michigan State just isn't that deep.
No. Nope.
And things are going to go up and down. Sometimes shots are going to fall, and sometimes they're not. But I'll tell you, won't be because of lack of effort.
Right.
And it won't be because of a lack of heart. Because This team's got effort, and this team's got heart. And it makes you want to root for them.
Yeah, that's right. This is the perfect kind of Tom Izzo sort of team that he likes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got Hogard and Walker, who can be dynamic. You've got Sissoko, who has to stay in the game and not foul, and play big. You've got Hauser, who, you know, does all the little things. And he can shoot. He can rebound. He can defend. He's your ultimate glue guy. And then Malik Hall can be a difference maker if he's healthy. And you got Jaden Akins off the bench, or who should come off the bench if everyone's healthy, who's a dynamic, athletic player. And then you got a cool, you've got some interesting bench pieces. But there's a huge fall off once you get past Akins.
Yeah.
And so does Michigan State have the depth? I think, you know, they're probably going to get worn down as the season goes along, and they're going to win some games they should win, and they're going to upset some people, and then they're going to turn around and lose to some people that they shouldn't lose to, in theory, just because it's the way the Big Ten, it's a grind, and this is a team that's going to struggle at times with the grind, just the nature of it.
Yeah.
The real question is, can Michigan State get it going come tournament time and build up some momentum to get into the NCAA tournament and then make a run because of the stuff that they built there. Excuse me.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, they have the reputation. You know, they are, you know, for better or worse, they can be a 17 or 18 win team in some years and still get in there. But, you know, you'd like not to rest on that. But that's kind of, you know, when I was looking at the whole schedule, you know, eyeballing it, you know, over the course of the last few weeks, that's kind of where I feel like they're at, is in that sort of 16-team win range, and then can they win one or two games in the Big Ten tournament? Can they knock off a couple big teams? The answer is yes, they can knock off a couple big teams that can also get beaten. So,
yeah, I think this is a year you cannot take that NCAA bid for granted.
Yep.
And if they get off on a big run and they make it happen, well, good for them. Because this is going to be rugged. I mean, take a look at the rankings here, folks. You've got, you know, Wisconsin number 17 in the country. You've got Purdue number 1 in the country. Illinois 16 in the country. These are some good basketball teams. There are no gimmies in Big Ten play, and especially when you have the depth issues that Michigan State does.
Right.
All right. Last thought on Michigan State basketball. I agree. I think it's going to be a tough run. But one other Michigan State basketball last news of note, Matt Ishbia, DB.
Yeah.
I think he's on the verge of buying the Phoenix Suns and the Phoenix Mercury.
Yeah. Well, good for him. Matt Ishbia, you know, definitely, his name has come up in quite a few circles as wanting to buy some sort of team. Buying an NBA team makes complete sense. His name came up here when, you know, the potential sale of the Washington Commanders came up.
Yeah, the Durs.
Name was thrown around for that, but I think he settled on an NBA team and probably wiser for that.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he wanted... So the Washington Commanders, let's be clear. On the one hand, it's one of, what, 32, right? Which is really cool, the owner of 132. And the NFL's the biggest, baddest league in the United States. And who doesn't want to be an NFL owner? On the other hand, it is fair to consider the Washington Commanders a distressed asset.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
They play in a stadium where the sewage falls through the roof and out to the fans.
Yes. At any moment, if you attend a Washington Commanders game, you could get hit by poopy water.
Yes. So
you don't really expect
to
want
poopy
that
water in
the
stands or watch poopy water on the field. Either way, it's not good.
And I didn't even know this until the other day, so forgive me for not paying attention as closely to the Washington Commanders, but Martin Mayhew is the general manager, and that slipped by me.
Wow. And is it any surprise that Martin Mayhew looks like a smart general manager once he gets outside of Detroit?
Right.
Actually, I thought he didn't do it. I thought he did a reasonably decent job in Detroit. I don't think he got enough credit for it.
He did. Yeah, he did.
He did. And so Ishbia looks like he's buying the Suns and the Mercury. That means, DB, that approximately 30% of the NBA is owned. No, not 30. About 10% of the NBA. Yes, that's right. About 10% of the NBA, DB, is owned by Michigan State alum.
Yes. Yep, Dan Gilbert with Cleveland and the guy with the Pistons, whose name I'm forgetting,
Frank Gores.
Yes.
How about that, Hunter Dickinson? What do you think of that? Michigan State, where you go to school if you want to buy an NBA team. What do you think of that, Hunter?
Yeah.
It is impressive. I mean, it's not what you would have thought. You might have thought Harvard or Stanford or, you know, Columbia or wherever these rich guy schools go to, right? But no, it's Michigan State.
Yep. MSU Business School.
Yeah.
Top rated place. Yep.
So, good for Michigan State. 10% DB of the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And Magic Johnson could own a team if he wanted to.
Yeah. He's got his hands in the LA Dodgers, I believe. It's part of the group, I think, that owns the LA Dodgers.
Yeah. So this is interesting. So they're good for Ishby. I'm happy for him. If you had told me, you know, 22 years ago, that Matt Ishbia would go on to become a billionaire and own the Phoenix Suns, I would have said, huh.
Yeah.
That's a bold prediction.
Yeah. That's like Tim, what's his name, that we laugh about. Tim, oh my gosh, his name is right on the tip of my tongue. The guy that made the huge shot at Rupp Arena against Kentucky.
Oh,
that
Tim
time as though it was just,
Tim
McGrackis. Tim McGrackis was just like in awe. Like Tom Izzo was just like his jaw dropped. Like, are you kidding me that Tim McGrackis won the game for us?
It's unbelievable. Look, I don't know Matt. I didn't know Matt Ishbia in college or anything like that. So this is not any attempt to be derisive of who he was in college. It's just, heck, if you told any one of us that, you know, the kid you're sitting next to in college is going on to be a billionaire, you'd be like, yeah, right. And then when it's like, you know, the guy in the basketball team that almost never plays, you're doubly, yeah, right.
Yeah. Ishbia was one of those kids that the Breslin student section would go crazy when he would get into the game.
Oh, yeah.
It's always
I'm
somebody
happy
like
for
that.
I'm really happy for Ishby. I mean, this is a man that's built a Michigan company, a company in the state of Michigan that's, you know, navigated a successful exit, become a billionaire, has employed many a Spartan, both athletic and just within the state, and deserves a lot of credit for really doing it under the radar. I mean, this wasn't one of those high-flying tech companies that, you know, just soared into the stratosphere. He did it the hard way. He did it in mortgages, and he built the company slowly, and he built it well, and he built it the last, and he made a ton of money, and he deserves every bit of it, and I'm happy for him. This is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's shift gears, DB. Talk a little women's hoops.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the Michigan State women's season. They're an interesting team.
Yep.
They win
a little bit of a tough go. A little bit of a tough go with the conference schedule starting out, but they play hard and they play close.
Yeah, they're gritty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I like about them. I think the other thing I like about them is, man, the teams are supposed to beat. They take care of business.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
All right. There is no messing around. I mean, look at these score lines. What, 86-37 over Delaware State, 85-53 over Fort Wayne, 97-49 over Western Michigan, 85-39 over Oakland. 109-44 over Florida A&M, 84-54 over Central Michigan. then they got bombed. They lost 80-49, and Iowa State's number 14 team in the country. Then they lost again to another ranked team, 86-78 to Oregon. And then they lost to a good Georgia Tech team, 66-63. And, you know, when they get into the tougher part of their schedule, they're struggling. Lost to Purdue 76-71. Lost to Ohio State 74-68. But the common – and then they just crushed Detroit 91-41. And they crushed Prairie View 98-50. Yep. And the common theme is that, man, they're crushing the teams they should be. And these better teams, for the most part, they're playing them pretty close.
Yep. Yeah, very similar to the men. We'll see how they do in conference play. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be a day or a night when they are able to knock somebody off, and then they're not going to do as well.
Yeah, I think much tougher path to the NCAA tournament for the women's.
Yep.
They've got number four, Indiana, coming up on December 29th. I'm looking forward to that game. That game is in the Breslin Center, 3 o'clock start time.
Yep.
If you're in the Lansing area, please come out and support the women. We know the students aren't there, but, you know, this team deserves all the support. So come out and cheer them on.
Yep.
And DB, on January 7th, you and I have to consider going to see the Michigan State Maryland game.
Yes. In College Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a future conversation. Excuse me, but we do have to consider that. And of course, the big game, Michigan State in Ann Arbor, January 14th.
Yes.
2 o'clock start time.
Yeah.
I will definitely be watching that game. Not in Ann Arbor because Sashmo does not go to Ann Arbor.
Sorry, Hunter Dickinson. We don't go there.
Sorry, Hunter Dickinson. You can't get me there for all the cottage inn pizza in the world.
For all the trips to the Briarwood Mall that you take, Hunter Dickinson, I'm not going there.
Oh my goodness! I mean, I will drive right off to the Ypsilanti Ann Arbor line, but that's as far as I go.
That's very Woody Hayes-ish of you. I'm not gassing up my car in Ann Arbor.
No. There's no filling the gas in Ann Arbor.
I will break down and get towed before I do that.
I mean, I'll pop that thing into neutral and push it across town before I fill up gas in Ann Arbor. No, sir.
Yeah.
Ann Arbor's not getting my money. All right. Shift gears from women's basketball. Hockey, DB.
Yeah.
So the Michigan State hockey team is interesting. They're 12-7-1 overall. 8-4 at home. 4-3-1 on the road.
They were ranked at last check.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of cruising along this season, DB.
Yeah.
You know, they went into Penn State. You know, they got a split at Penn State, which I don't think they could have done in previous years.
Nope.
And they went into Miami, Ohio, and swept a pair. And then came Minnesota.
Yeah.
And, boy, was that ugly.
Yeah, it was rough.
They lost 5-0 and 6-3 at home.
Yeah. Yep. The Spartans were served the cup of reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a famous Lee Corso, Not So Fast, My Friend, set of games.
Yeah.
The Gophers just reminded Michigan State, oh, you got a ways to go.
Yeah.
Yep. They bounced back, beat Michigan in East Lansing.
Yep.
And then they lost to Michigan in Ann Arbor.
Yep. Both close games, and they played well even in the loss.
Yeah, it does strike me, though, DB, and I'm starting to view this Michigan State team through this lens, that it's a team that's going to sort of scuff around on the road and win more often than not at home.
Mm-hmm.
Which, frankly, is an improvement over the last few years.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of exciting. But these home-road splits, man, they're frustrating.
Yeah.
Because you're not actually back until you start winning on the road more consistently.
That's correct, yeah.
I'm trying to think. I mean, for the most part, I mean, their offense is scoring. They're putting up enough goals to win, well, except in the games they lose. But
yeah, they were a little bit more challenged. I mean, you know, not to dismiss what happened against Minnesota, but, you know, they only scored one goal in the two games against Minnesota. And, you know, the Michigan games were low scoring, but the Spartans did show some defensive capability, which has also really been missing a lot, too, over the past several years.
Yeah, I mean, they got shut out at home 5-0 in the first game and then lost the second game 6-3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, when they did the home and home, not home and home, when they were on the road in Miami, Ohio, they 5-3, 4-0. At Penn State, the game they won 7-3. And at Penn State, they lost. The game they lost 4-3. I mean, the goals are going in the net. At Ohio State, they won both games, 4-2, 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the season, when they swept Wisconsin, they won 5-0 and 5-1, both at Munn.
Yeah.
Notre Dame, though, wow. I mean, lost 5-0 and tied 1-1.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's up and down. And like you said, they're not completely taking care of business on the road yet. But on the other hand, something to be said here for, you know, showing some offensive life, showing some defensive life, and maybe, you know, Adam Nightingale has sort of figured out a system that can work with this team.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm hoping to take in a game, DB, before the year ends.
Oh, that'd be great.
I'll tell you which game it won't be. The Great Lakes Invitational Games, which are played for unknown reasons in Grand Rapids, Michigan now.
At Van Andel Arena. Is that what they still call it? Van Andel
Arena?
Yeah,
Van Andel Arena in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah.
This is a terrible idea.
Yeah, and who, besides Michigan and Michigan State, is it also Michigan Tech? And is it Western?
Ferris State.
Oh, Ferris, okay. All
right. I don't think there's a Michigan. No, it's Michigan Tech, Western Michigan, and Ferris State. I don't even think Michigan's there.
Oh, so Michigan's not in it this year?
Not as far as I can tell.
Interesting.
Great
well,
Lakes Invitational, December 27th, Ferris State, and then I guess December 28th will be the Michigan Tech, Western Michigan winner.
You're right.
Or loser, depending on whether or not we win or not.
You're right.
What the heck kind of hockey tournament is this?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious as to how and why Michigan sort of backed out of that.
It's like the bean pot with no Boston College and BU.
Yeah, right.
You want to know why Michigan backed out?
Hmm.
They're cowards.
So that's what Hunter Dickinson didn't tell you, how cowardly they are.
All right, just to catch you up on the rest of the schedule, the Great Lakes Invitational, which we will not be going to because it's in Grand Rapids. And by the way, Grand Rapids was the first place I ever got a speeding ticket, and I was not speeding. Got a bone to pick with Grand Rapids. Ohio State, we've got two games at Ohio State to start the new year, January 6th and 7th. And then we've got a series at Penn State against Penn State at Mutt. And then we're at Minnesota. And then home versus Notre Dame. Those are big, DB. I mean, and that's before you get to the Michigan series, where one game in Mudd and one game in Little Caesars Arena.
Yep.
So, by the way, that game at Little Caesars Arena is going to be on ESPNU.
Ah, all right. Yeah, while you were talking, I was just trying to get some intel into what went on with Michigan not being in the GLI, because Michigan Tech is the host, as they have been, and I can't find any definitive reason other than last year, Michigan Tech, I think there's some bad blood between Michigan Tech and Michigan, because last year, as you recall, they did the GLI for the first time ever on the campus sites, and I say campus sites, just East Lansing and Ann Arbor. And for some unknown reason, not explained, was deemed health and safety protocols, Michigan canceled their game with Michigan Tech in the tournament last year. And I think that left a sour taste in the Huskies' mouth, and they didn't invite Michigan.
I'm not buying it. I think my explanation's better. Michigan's scared.
They're scared.
Scared.
Yeah, I don't really know.
Yeah, but I think you've got a point about Nightingale. It feels like Nightingale's got a sense of which buttons to push, and more importantly, is put together a system that makes sense for the personnel that fit. So he's got them competitive.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So
and yeah,
this begs two questions, which I think are worth answering. One is the talent hasn't changed that much between last year and this year. Did Michigan State just have to go through growing pains to get here, or was the coaching just that bad?
Yeah, that's a tough question. Well, clearly the coaching does have some effect on this. And it's interesting to me because Dan Cole was so well thought of. I mean, we even sat here on a podcast when he was hired several years back saying, yeah, all right, you know, this is a good guy. This is a good hire. You know, it seemed to make sense. And now that I think about it, when I look back, maybe Dan Cole just isn't that good of a coach. Maybe it needed some other eyes on it. But also too, I think some growing pains maybe had to happen. Maybe Adam Nightingale has inherited a team that grew up a little bit, and maybe a fire was lit under them, you know, when they saw their coach leave.
Yeah, I'd like to give Dan Cole the benefit. Look, Dan Cole came from the same place Nightingale came from, right? Same coaching program, the U.S. team, same coaching program, mm-hmm. same coaching philosophies and concepts and that sort of stuff. He was good there.
The one
Dan Cole was good in other spots. I find it hard to believe that Dan Cole all of a sudden forgot how to coach hockey when he stepped into East Lansing.
Yeah, the one little bugaboo that I had with Dan Cole. I don't want to say that he was fully blaming players, but I do recall a lot of his news conferences, especially last year, where he was not taking as much responsibility as I thought he should have, even though the players do have to produce. I think when you're talking out loud, but it's a small thing, you know.
This is the hardest thing for coaches to do, is to come out and take responsibility. Like, they're the ones that coach them to turn the puck over.
Yeah, right. Right.
To me, there's this really fine line, just in terms of fan expectations. Like, what do we want out of our coaches? Like, oh, you can't blame the players. It's like, all right. Mm-hmm. Then if the coach takes the blame himself, they're like, man, the coach has got to get rid of this player and this one. What do you want out of the coach?
Yeah.
I mean, Tom Izzo walks probably the line the best by saying, hey, we got to do everything better. We got to play better. We got to coach better. But I understand what you're saying. But man, if I'm Dan Cole, I'm just trying to put myself in this position. I'd be like, we practiced this power play like for 20 hours, and they still went out and didn't do what we practiced. What do you want out of me?
Yeah. And also, too, you know, I was looking at last year's schedule, and I think that does give me some insight into this team last year. And as I look at that, they had that terrible losing streak. I mean, after the GLI win over Michigan Tech in East Lansing on December 30th, when the calendar flipped over to 2022, they did not win a game for just about 2 months, and they finally beat Penn State at home to finish on senior night, and then they were just quickly eliminated from the Big Ten tournament. And it was, you know, but some of the losses in that stretch, and this season has the similarity because they did well in the first half of the season, and then in the second half, they couldn't keep up. And so the biggest deficiency, the biggest eyesore was no offense. But some of the scores were close.
So maybe they were on the wrong end of a lot of close games, and now some of those close games are going their way. And maybe before we throw Nightingale any parades, we should wait and see what he does with calendar flips.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important to see that. And also, you know, I think it may lend a little bit more to what you were saying in terms of, did this team just need to season a little bit? They need to marinate a little bit more. If they can come out in the second half and keep playing like they're doing and get better, that's all we're asking for is improvement. You know, I wasn't even asking for the Spartans to be ranked in the first part of the season. So that's nice to see. I'm not worried about that right now. I just want to see this program improve and be competitive again.
I agree. And you're right. Sometimes, you know, maybe this was just like a slow cooker.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to wait. And now we're seeing the results.
And, you know, one thing that we can't forget, we're only two, and I know that people will sort of get angry and think it's an excuse, but it's not. We're only 2 years removed from the COVID season, which all across the board and college sports was really just nothingness. I mean, you can't even measure that season. It was a lost season for everybody in every sport in college.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
I think the COVID seasons just wrecked college kids, college athletes, college teams, college programs, college sports, all in unique and different ways that all these things are just still shaking themselves out and sorting themselves out.
Yeah, just like in the world, you know. And, you know, yeah, I mean, college kids, you know, you hit on something there. I mean, you know, like the mental health aspect of things, you know, you have things going on beyond sports, and then you're asking these kids to play, and are they going to catch the virus? And, you know, the whole thing was just there was no NCAA hockey tournament or basketball tournaments in spring of 2020. Everything just ended, and I don't know. You know, it's just like that had a big impact on everything, and then you start those seasons, and you're not playing in front of fans at first, and, you know, cardboard cutouts, then it's college kids. You know, it's not the pros, and it was still weird with them doing it. And, you know, I just like that Spartan football season and Mel Tucker's first season. How do you even measure that? I mean, you play 7 games, and what do you got? I mean, you don't even know what you got. So
yeah.
I think that's had an impact on a lot of different teams and schools. And, you know, when we look back, we may see that was with MSU hockey as an example. Maybe that was a factor in all this.
No, I think that's a good place to wrap up the hockey discussion. I think you're spot on there. And, you know, well, let's see what happens when the calendar flips.
Yep.
And go from there. You provided a good segue to Michigan State football by bringing up Mel Tucker. I'm going to take it. But before we do that, NCAA tournament asking too much for this Michigan State team? Maybe win a game in the big tournament, the Big Ten tournament? What is meaningful progress? Not losing all your games in 2023?
Well, yeah, that would be one way to start. You don't want to repeat that, because then what's happening, you know, barring injuries or anything? I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I think that the players that were on this team last year that went through that have to be very aware that they need to keep their eye on the ball. But what is progress? I think progress is, you know, just playing improved hockey, playing like they've been playing for the better part of the first half. And then let's see, you know, if they can, let's see if they can make a run in the Big Ten turn. Let's start there first, you know, small goals, and then... Yeah.
Yeah. What I want to see highly competitive hockey, and you're going to win some, you're going to lose some, but I want to see highly competitive hockey with pulling these through every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I see that, I'm happy. Brought up Mel Tucker. Let's segue to football. We're going to spend all 30 seconds on football. You want to know why we're going to spend all of 30 seconds on football? Because we don't care about recruiting. Do not care. If you want to care about recruiting, go listen to another podcast. Seriously.
That's right. No, I agree.
Michigan State, when we last spoke, had an outside chance of going to a bowl game due to, like, graduation records and all sorts of stuff. Didn't happen. And so now we've got an off season that is coming in and around us. And DB, what do you want to see from Michigan State between now and when spring practice starts?
You know, for the guys coming back, just really working hard, focusing, getting healthy, staying healthy, just getting in a positive mindset. And, you know, don't forget what happened this past year, but don't dwell on it, you know. And I think that this team can move past this. And this is where, you know, the coach has to be a coach. This is when you're truly tested as a coach, when you have no bowl, you have no, you know, there's nothing now until spring ball. And so the players have to be responsible for working out, working with each other, you know, working with their teammates that are coming back. And then when we get the spring ball, we can see, you know, any of the new recruits that might be coming in, or definitely by the summer. I think it's just conditioning.
Yeah, so you've taken a very player-centric approach to this, which is good. It allowed me to take a coach-centric approach to this.
Yeah.
And I know that there are a lot of Spartan fans out there that want, like, firings, mass firings from the coaching staff.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not calling for that. I am not asking for that. That's not what I'm here to talk about.
Plus,
I am here to talk about
the coaching staff,
though.
That would have already happened if there was going to be a firing. I mean, that
yeah,
wasn't on
I
the table
so.
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. What I do want to see, though, is a level of introspection.
Yeah.
I want to see a level of looking inwards and saying, what did we do well and what did we do poorly? And how do we fix and adjust what we did poorly? And so I think my chief quibble, kind of like that word, quibble, my chief quibble with the Michigan State coaching staff is not that they blame it on the execution. Like, yeah, we just didn't execute. It was like Bill Belichick coming up yesterday, which we will talk about. You know, coming out in the press conference saying, yeah, we didn't execute on the last play of the game. Well, no shit. Right?
Right.
I mean, of course you didn't execute. That might have been the worst play in NFL history, but that's not the point. My point with Mel Tucker is that and the entire coaching staff, I want a level of introspection to get the sense that they look deep into what it is they did well and didn't do well, and mostly into what they didn't do well, and have an interesting plan to fix it. And one of the interesting things to me right now is the current Baylor head coach. He realized, you know, after the first season that his time management needed work. He just wasn't very good at it. Clock management, games, situational management, that sort of stuff. So he hired someone just to focus on that aspect of the game and added it to the staff. I'm not saying Michigan State should do that or has to do that, but that's the level of introspection that I want to see. Right?
Yes.
I want to see that, hey, you know, this didn't work or this did work. We're making these adjustments as a result. And a little bit of transparency around that, too. Rather than say, yep, we're back for another season, you know, we'll get back out of the team and all that sort of stuff. Because at a certain point, having fan buy-in means something. It matters. And not that you want to give away state secrets or anything like that, but pulling the curtain back just a fraction of an inch to let people know that yes, you understand that there were problems and you're working on fixing it is probably a good thing.
Yes. In all aspects of the coaching, like you're saying, you know, not just how they prepare the team, but the in-game stuff, you know, what are we doing? We clearly can do something better, especially on offense. You know, what can we do? How can things not look like a fire drill? You know, what did we do well that we can continue? The defense really did play pretty well in against a couple of good teams. One in a loss, one in a win. And so analyzing all that stuff, but really honestly doing it, not just, you know, patting each other on the back. You know, let's really see it. And that's Tucker's job, is to really lay it all out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think that's a good place to leave Michigan State football.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the other football team in the state of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
The Detroit Lions.
Yes.
Break out the Lions. Restore the roar, DB. You must be beside yourself in joy.
I'm smiling and I'm wearing my Lions shirt while we're doing this podcast because I'm excited for the first time in a while that the Lions, I really can't believe it. I mean, this has even gone beyond, you know, some of those Wayne Fonts years when he would pull out the magic dust at the end of the season. I mean, this team started 1-6 and they really looked bad in that stretch of time. And now all of a sudden, everything's coming together for this team. Their offense looks like a real offense.
Well, they won 6 of the last 7.
Yeah. And even the loss to the Bills was, they gave the Bills quite a game. It wasn't a guaranteed win until the very end for the Bills.
All right. So let's be clear. I'm a Giants fan. So
yep.
I like talking about the Lions. Most of my friends are Lions fans, so I know a fair amount about the Lions, but I'm a Giants fan. The Lions are better than the Giants. There, I said it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would agree, and that result happened on the field near Thanksgiving. The Lions defeated the Giants in Newark.
This is a remarkably good football team. Let's back up. The offense has been playing at a fairly consistent and high level all year long.
Yes.
And so the Lions deserve a lot of credit for building a very productive offense that has the ability to put points on the board. The Lions defense has gone from, I want every one of my fantasy quarterbacks starting against that Lions defense to... And believe me, that was my strategy earlier in the year, and it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. And why did I have to employ that strategy? Because I drafted Matthew Stafford. But we'll get to fantasy football in a minute. I mean, it was bad. I mean, it was historically bad.
Yes.
It was. But now they've played well enough that they, I mean, just going from historically bad to slightly below average has allowed them to win 6 of 7.
Yeah. No, they figured some things out. And they're not a perfect defense, but they started making stops. And that's all you have to do sometimes. You know, you don't have to – defense doesn't – you know, you don't want to rely on your defense to win – you don't want to rely on one side of the ball to do everything. Like Mel Tucker said, you know, what's that phrase he's used? Balanced. What did he say?
With both complimentary sides of the ball. Football.
Yes. Well, that's what you have to win. And the Lions are doing that right now. They're doing it. And it's impressive.
A little bit of pixie dust in terms of forcing the turnovers, but hey, they're forcing the turnovers.
Yep. Yep.
It reminds me a little bit of Michigan State defense, not this past season, but the year before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Teams were moving the ball, but in the end, they weren't scoring.
Right. That's right. And also, too, a big key that people are forgetting about, the special teams has improved on the Lions, and that was nowhere to be found. And even the kicker was terrible at the beginning. I mean, you want to talk about similarities with Michigan State. I mean, this is a pro team. The Lions kicker, it was an adventure kicking extra points early in the season. Well, that's improved. So I was really surprised he put that kicker out there for a 47-yarder this past week or whenever it was. And I was like, okay, he made it. Wow. I was like, I don't know. Is this a good move? You know, but he did it. And so I'm like, all right, well, that's a huge part of the game right there.
My only request of Dan Campbell is to stop kicking those 55-yard field goals at the end of games.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think the kicker's made one yet. And every time it's just put the defense in a bad position.
Yeah, no 55-yarders. Just punt it. Know your personnel. It's just like a third base coach in baseball. You don't send Cecil Fielder running to the plate with somebody with a good arm.
Oh, unless you want a collision. Unless you want to knock the catcher out of the game, in which case you do it.
Yes. for the comedic effect of it, yes. With the catcher, the bowling pin, yes. All right, fine. But will the catcher hold on to the ball, I guess? All right. Maybe that's a bad example, but you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying, yeah.
You got to know your personnel, you know. And so, yeah, I suspect he's not going to try a 55-yarder.
All right. This offense is really good. And so I leave you with this question, because the Lions clearly won the Matthew Stafford trade.
Yes.
Right? So they got Hutchinson with the top draft pick. They got another draft, a couple other players in this draft pick on defense that are playing really well, helped turn this around. Really good draft by the Lions.
Yeah.
And then they got the Rams draft pick, and everyone was like, ha, 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 it's going to be a terrible pick. Lo and behold, the Lions are good, the Rams are terrible, and the Lions are going to end up with a top five pick out of the deal.
Yeah.
And so here's my question to you, Lions fan. Quarterback or something else?
That's an interesting thing.
Because I think we can all agree that Jared Goff is a good quarterback, but he's not a great quarterback.
Right. Right.
And maybe we can agree that Jared Goff is a good quarterback. Maybe we can agree that Jared Goff is an average quarterback.
Who's overachieving this year? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
An average quarterback having
question.
A great year.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because there's not a lot of depth if Goff goes down. So I think the time would be right to consider drafting a good quarterback to, if nothing else, to be, you know, having him learning behind Goff, and with the idea that there'd be a transition at some point.
So, yeah, I mean, that's one way of doing it. Like, the other way of doing it is saying, hey, we've built a really good offensive system with the players that we've got and the scheme that we've got, that an average quarterback can score 30 points a game. And, you know, maybe we don't worry about the quarterback for right now, but we build an elite level defense, which you can do with a top draft pick.
Yeah, I mean,
You just don't get that many top five. Well, I guess you're the Lions, so you do. But in theory, you don't get that many top five draft picks.
Yeah, and we know about the Lions' past is littered with bad top five picks. But I don't suspect that to be the case here. I think the quarterback question is intriguing, and you know, and looking around the NFL, I don't see, you know, where, I mean, they don't need to go after a free agent. And I don't see anybody on the free agent market that like wows me that I would want to have on my bench. I mean, maybe just somebody for insurance, you know, but that it's not to build a future around. So you think about the kid from TCU or the USC kid. I mean, if they're there, you know, go for it. I think it's a really valid question.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think if you're able to land, depending on where the Rams end up, I think if you're able to land either the top defensive tackle or top defensive end or top edge rusher, whatever it is, I almost think you need to take it. And the reason why is I think Jared Goff is a perfectly adequate quarterback. But when you draft a quarterback up high, it's a 50-50 shot.
Yeah.
But when you draft an interior lineman, usually you're getting a good deal.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're starting to come up with a defensive line that has the potential to be dominant.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. That helps the field position game. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that dominant defensive line is something the Lions have really been sort of missing. It comes in starts sometimes, but they haven't really had it consistently.
And I could be wrong because, I mean, I don't think the USC quarterback's coming out. So there's no surefire to me. I mean, out of this group, do I think the TCU is surefire prone? No. Do I think, you know, the Kentucky quarterbacks are surefire prone? I don't think any of the guys are talking about the top of the bracket. I look at it and say, yep, that's John Elway and Dan Marino. I'm just not seeing it.
Yeah, right. You raise a good point. You know, it depends on who's there, but I think you can never have enough good defensive players either.
Yeah. Well,
and those are more in abundance. Those kind of players are going to be more in abundance than, you know, a good quarterback.
Yeah. Well, kudos to the Lions for actually winning a trade.
Yeah, it's looking really good right now. But, hey, you know, the Rams got a Super Bowl out of that. And if I was on the Rams side of that, I would take it.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's a trade that worked for both sides.
Yes. If the situation was reversed and the Lions won a Super Bowl out of that trade, I'd say, well, we won a Super Bowl out of that trade. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
I agree. I think it was a trade that worked for both sides. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Detroit Red Wings, DB.
Yeah.
They're not good.
We're starting to see how the Red Wings are when they are missing just a few offensive pieces.
It's about more than missing a few offensive pieces, DB. I mean, their record is reasonable, right?
Yes.
But
it's an improvement, this happened with them last year, too. They started off well in the first half, like the Spartan hockey team, and then they went down the drain.
Well, because what Detroit is doing right now as a hockey team is unsustainable, which is winning exclusively with special teams. At some point, you have to win 5-on-5, and Detroit is just – they just can't do it.
No. Yeah. The reality will hit them. If it hasn't already.
Almost every team outplays them 5-on-5.
Yeah. Yeah. They're buying time, and so the slip is going to happen. And they lack toughness. What do you think of their defense? Do you think it's improved, or is it still, you know, in terms of puck handling and possession?
It's definitely improved.
Yeah.
I mean, they're making the simple passes out of the zone. The puck is getting out of there quicker. All of that sort of stuff. Now, the baseline for improvement was a negative number. So.
Yes. And Uncle Fester, the head coach, you know, he's been able to come in there and I guess just like with the Spartan hockey team, you know, with Adam Nightingale, kind of a new set of eyes on things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he has them playing better.
Yes. In small ways. Yes.
In small and little ways, he's got them playing better. Look, first of all, they brought in more talent, so they had to get better.
Yeah. Yeah.
But honest to goodness, if you're another team, DB, you're scouting the Red Wings and you're putting together a game plan, who's the guy in Detroit that scares you?
Currently nobody.
Right?
Yeah.
This is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got a collection of nice players that can play well, but there's no one that scares anyone.
No. Nope. They're not there yet. hopefully they're headed in that direction.
Don't know if they get there, but I'll tell you what, the person that scares someone is not on the NHL roster right now.
No, right.
They're better than they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, draft picks are almost the same as, like, recruits. You know, we don't know how these guys that they're drafting. I mean, they look good on paper, some of these people, but we don't. I mean, you can go listen to a Red Wings, you know, in-depth podcast for that. I have no idea. But they still have a ways to go. If they were to make the playoffs this year, that's a huge if, all caps, underline, three times. It would be lucky, you know, it would be that the other teams around them are not winning enough or something is going on. And usually in the first part of the year, the teams that are kind of not, that might have more talent are not playing as well for some reason that might have to do with injuries or whatever. There's a few obvious teams, you know, more of them in the Western Conference that I see that are really lacking. But in the Eastern Conference, they're kind of bunched together. So I'm not really sure. I think it's still kind of a feeling out process, but I think you can sort of see, I can see what you're saying. The Wings are going to slip down. They're starting to slip a little bit.
Yeah. You can't win a 5-on-5 hockey. You can't win. And they've been punching above their weight class and they're going to fall. What do you think of the Ryan Reeves hit?
Well, I talked to a bunch of different, I wanted some real hockey people talking to me about this because I like the announcers on TNT and, you know, but I was kind of wondering if they were kind of tasting the Gary Bettman cooking, you know, that they were supposed to say those things, that it was a clean hit, you know? And so they all were saying it was a clean hit. So I asked co-people and they said clean hit, but I got to tell you, Satchmo, I know that the player going to make the hit in open ice is going to have a hard time stopping. But on the other hand, there should have been some kind of discipline or penalty or something here. I mean, all I heard was that the announcer's blaming the Red Wing player for not keeping his head up. And certainly he needs to keep his head up. Hronek was the guy. But it's like, I don't know. It didn't sit with me that there was no punitive aspect to this. That guy should have got 5 minutes. I mean, there's blood on the face of this guy and also a concussion.
Yeah, so...
Was I missing something?
So Reeves basically took two strides. It's not like he went across the ice and lined them up.
Yeah.
And I do think the Red Wings player needs to keep his head up. That's how you avoid this.
Yeah.
I also think his Red Wings teammates did him a great disservice.
Yeah, they did nothing.
They did nothing. I mean, they should have been yelling, screaming, look out.
Yeah. Yeah. They waved the white flag, and Anton Carter commented, the Wings aren't built that way. But somebody said what you said. I don't know if it was Tockett or the other guy, but they said, you gotta still do it anyways. You gotta go. Take your medicine and go after him.
Yeah, I mean, A, they weren't screaming at the ice in real time to look out, the hit was coming. And B, there was no response. They rolled over. They rolled over and asked for a belly rub. That's what they did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unconscionable. I mean, the captain has to take a look at that. I mean, you got to have, you know, the days of the enforcers are over with, certainly, but you got to have a little bit of toughness on your team. You got to have a little bit of, I'm not saying go ram the guy's head into the ice, but, you know, don't let them get away with that. You know, start hitting some people.
Yeah, you got to have a little dog. Yeah, you got to have a little dog. Yeah. Yeah, it was disappointing. I'm not expecting
that
much
part
of the Red Wings from the rest of the
year. Yeah, I can tell that. The Detroit fans are excited about them, but I think that we have to definitely temper the enthusiasm yet. I mean, it's nice to see them seeming improved. But again, just like the Spartan hockey team, we need to see more information. And I think, you know, I have more doubts about the Red Wings.
Yeah.
You know, just,
and for the
like
record, I am a Red Wings fan. So I might not be a Lions fan, but I am definitively a Red Wings fan. I love the Red Wings.
Yeah.
I watch a lot of Red Wings hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I've always watched a lot of Red Wings hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I was there when they won the cup in Washington.
Yes, you were. It was that was the golden age for us.
It was the golden age for us, and I'm just sitting there looking at it saying, I don't see it.
No. Can you imagine Darren McCarty or the grind line not responding to a hit like that?
it's just stunning. But I don't see the skill level. I don't see the grit. I don't see this team is better than last year's team, without a doubt. So I'm not even trying to make that argument. I just don't think they're very good.
No. I think when things shake out as the second half goes on, that's when you usually see, you know, Tampa Bay maybe hasn't played to their level. Washington hasn't played to their level yet. They've got guys out that are going to come back. And so a whole bunch of stuff's going to happen in the second half. Plus, you have Boston is really good, and New Jersey is playing out of their minds. I don't know if they can continue that. But anyway.
You brought up Washington, as did I. Which brings us to Alexander Ovechkin.
Yes.
Neat moment in Chicago. Scores his 800th goal.
Yep.
The Chicago fans, give them credit, chanted his name, really took the time to appreciate the moment. I was impressed.
Yes.
I was definitively impressed. I don't think that would have happened in New Jersey.
or Philadelphia.
Or Philadelphia.
In the FU Center. They play in the FU Center, I think.
So both of those things are good. The next goal, I guess, ties him with Gordie Howe.
Yes.
And two goals puts him past. Let us be clear on a couple of things very quickly. First of all, the next goal ties Gordie Howe's NHL record or NHL scoring mark. Not Gordie Howe's overall scoring mark, because he scored, what, another 100 and something goals with the WHL?
Yes.
And the WHL was a good hockey league.
Yes.
It was NHL caliber hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not get carried away, people, about the Ovi patching Gordie Howe sort of thing. Ovi's still got a long ways to go to catch Gordie.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, how good is Wayne Gretzky? If you took away all of his goals, he would still be ahead of Alexander Ovechkin in points by such a significant margin. It's not even funny with just his assists.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so records are broken, you know, in sports, and it's fun to see. And they're sort of like, you know, milestones and things. And look, I'll give full credit to Ovechkin. He's a really great player. I mean, he's an excellent two-way player. His game has improved forecheck-wise and defensively over the years. He's talented. But you can't take anything away from, you know, not only Gordie Howe, but Wayne Gretzky was amazing. I mean, he was a magician, and no goal record can erase that.
Yeah. And Ovechkin's got a long way to go before he catches Gretzky.
Yes.
And that's, I don't know whether Ovechkin will get there or not. You need a combination of good luck, good health, good fortune, good team, all that stuff to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that Teddy Ballgame is committed to getting Ovi this record the same way the Red Wings were committed to staying in the playoffs all those years. It cost the Red Wings franchise dearly because now they're just so bereft of talent they can't compete. And I have a feeling it's going to do the same thing for the Capitals franchise.
Yeah. Well, sell tickets. And sometimes you live in the moment, but that's hard. You know, you think about, I mean, I guess what I hear you saying is that the Edmonton Oilers did make a smart decision by trading Gretzky in that summer of 1988.
100%. Had to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. As painful as that was, as shocking as that was, and we grew up in the Detroit area with Canadian TV, and I don't know if you remember, in the summertime on Canadian TV, it was like, you know, the Prime Minister had died. You know, like Wayne Gretzky traded the United States, first of all, and then to the L.A. Kings. Oh, my God, who he called a Mickey Mouse team or somebody. Maybe that was New Jersey. But anyway, yeah, but it was a smart trade. At the time, it looked ridiculous, but Edmonton pulled out another cup or two out of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Had to do it.
Yeah.
And I hate to be the one that says this. So if you're going to at me, come at me. I don't care. I think the right play for Washington is to trade Ovi.
Ooh.
That Stanley Cup window's closed, DB. Do you see the Capitals legitimately challenging for a Stanley Cup?
No. Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. You read my mind. There is no more Stanley Cups with this group.
No.
No. Nope.
All right, so if you're not challenging for a cup, why are you then your second choice is saying, all right, well, we're just going to keep building this team around Ovi so he can score a bunch of goals. That doesn't serve the franchise.
But that's exactly what he's probably going to do.
Well, it's 100% what he's going to do.
Yeah.
Ted Leo, this is a marketing guy. This is a marketing opportunity. He's going to do it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the smart move would be, you know, I don't know how long. I'm not sure of his contract, but, you know, let's pretend it's next year. Okay, let him pass Gordie Howe this year, and, you know, you can make a big deal out of it. But then in the summertime, think about a trade and let him go, you know, fill in somewhere and become, you know, he sort of even said, I don't want to be a third line guy somewhere. So he's already put that on the table. Well, at some point he's going to be, his body's not going to be able to be a first line guy anymore.
Well, the only place he wouldn't be a third-line guy is with the Capitals.
That's right. Yeah. So I think the writing's on the wall as to exactly what's happening. And so the Capitals fans can take pleasure in this right now because that's all they talk about. I mean, you turn on a game, and that is all they are saying is Ovechkin is one away. Ovechkin is one away. You know, it's as bad as when you listen to Al Michaels call a Thursday night game. And he says, on a Thursday night from Lumen Field, on a Thursday night from Lumen Field. I don't know how many times those guys say that during a broadcast, but it drives me crazy. And it's the same thing with Ovechkin.
Yeah, I hear you on that. You're right. Look, he's going to get a congratulations to that. One last note on Ovechkin talk, and then we'll go to fantasy football and we'll wrap this up. Is Ovechkin the best Russian player that's played in the NHL?
Well, we're going to be biased here, probably because we saw how good number 91 was for the Red Wings.
Yeah.
And so on sheer talent alone, I mean, there was no one that could – oh, it's a hard question – so Sergei Fedorov was electric. I mean, even for that time when he was with the Caps and they were just starting to squeak into the playoffs and he was like a mentor to Ovechkin, he had a little bit of it there, but he was aging. But there was nothing like the Joe exploding when Sergei Fedorov had the puck and then all the drama around Sergei Fedorov with the girlfriends and the Scotty Bowman doghouse and everything else. But oh, that's a hard question. I'm not sure that I can answer it. And as far as like best Russian goes, oh man, what do you think?
It's Sergey, hands down.
Yeah.
I mean, Alexander Ovechkin, I mean, is an incredible goal scorer. Don't get me wrong. Phenomenal goal scorer. Clearly one of the best in NHL history. Right? But but Brett Hull was a great goal scorer. No one's going to make the case that Brett Hull was a better hockey player than Sergei Fedorov. You can't make that case.
No.
You can't. Sergei Fedorov could play the point on the power play. Sergei Fedorov played defense in the NHL.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, Sergei Fedorov's passing skills and his skating skills. Ovechkin is not the complete player that Fedorov was.
No.
And frankly, Ovechkin benefited from a change in the rules where the game became less physical and you had more space to... Could you imagine Sergei Fedorov in his prime, what he could do with people that couldn't grab him and pull him down?
Yeah.
Without all the clutching and grabbing?
Yeah. And Sergei Fedorov was able to work through that and was unbelievable. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, from a pure, you know, passing standpoint and a pure, you know, two-way player, you know, it's Fedorov hands down. Ovechkin is a really tough player, and he's really a tremendous goal scorer, too. Fedorov was also. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, and Ovechkin is, you know, he's exciting to watch, but Fedorov was really exciting to watch in a different time of the league, too. Yeah.
You're not throwing in Ovechkin in the faceoff circle to win you a game.
No.
You would with Sergei.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I understand it's different positions and all of that sort of stuff, but Sergei coming down the ice at full speed was... It wasn't just scary. It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah. Yeah, talk about somebody that would scare you.
All right, last topic, and then we'll wrap this up. Fantasy football TV.
May I interject? Maybe we have to have a last topic. We do need to mention Mike Leach at the very end.
Oh, let's do that now.
Okay.
Let's do that now. Let's talk about Mike Leach.
Yeah.
Mike Leach. So there used to be a school of thought in football that that when you threw the football, three things could happen and two of them were bad. Or four things could happen and three of them were bad. I think that's how the thing was.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That used to be the approach to all of football. Mike Leach single-handedly changed that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I say that because he started throwing the ball all over the place. And not just throwing the ball all over the place, you know, running these interesting offensive concepts that actually empowered his quarterbacks to make a lot of calls, make a lot of throws, and elevate teams that in Texas Tech and Washington State and Mississippi State that, man, they couldn't win with anyone else. And Mike Leach shows up and comes out and they start winning. But Mike Leach was more than that, right? What Mike Leach did, his concepts went down into high school football. And then from high school football back into college, and then from college into the NFL, Mike Leach changed football.
Yes.
There's only one other coach that's had almost a similar impact on offensive football. I mean, just from a collegiate and high school, that's June Jones. I mean, in the NFL, he brought the run and shoot to the NFL. Some of those principles Mike Leach ran, but Mike Leach had a bigger impact because his impact in high school.
Yeah.
College football NFL, high school football, it is different because of Mike Leach, and he deserves a ton of credit for that.
Yeah, I was looking at, like, while you were saying that, he holds or held as a coach so many different offensive records, and the biggest thing that stands out is winning seasons. He went to programs that were mired in the mud, like Kentucky, Texas Tech, Washington State, and he made them relevant.
And he did that while having a cool personality. Look, I don't agree with Leach's politics, right? I think his politics make him a jackass, right?
Yeah.
But I still liked him.
Yeah.
And I liked him because he was quirky and fun, and he had the pirate shtick. But it wasn't just the pirate shtick. He was a genuinely curious human being. He would talk to you about stuff. He was kind of a nice cat. So you have all of that. But there is a downside to Mike Leach, right? You know, there's the allegations of treating players badly and, you know, just not to get all racial about this, but take a look at the outpouring of support for Mike Leach and just look at the difference. You don't see that many of Mike Leach's, you know, African-American players coming out and throwing out the plaudits and that sort of stuff. It's almost all the white players.
Yeah.
So Mike Leach isn't perfect, but I liked Mike Leach. I did.
Yeah.
Am I conflicted about Mike Leach? Yeah, I'm a little conflicted about Mike, but ultimately I liked him. I think he was good for, I mean, man, more people should be like Mike Leach. I mean, just in terms of being open and curious and talkative and just enjoying life, having that joie de vivre. I think college football's turned into a series of robots coaching, and it's not good for the game.
Yeah, and if you recall, it was, and again, MSU indirectly was involved in the sort of Texas Tech Alamo Bowl, where was pretty much like a home game for Texas Tech, and Leach was suspended because of the mistreatment of Craig James's son, who played on the team at that time. And he had a concussion, and Leach demanded he play, and the family got involved. And I remember the whole, there was a circus atmosphere around that. And MSU was just lucky to be in a bowl game. And it got out of hand after a while, but it was that whole air raid, you know, offense, even though Leach wasn't on the field, it was there beating the Spartans in that game.
Yeah, it was there. It was Mike Leach pulling the strength from, you know, not even being in the game. And I'll tell you what, there's been a lot of lawsuits and litigation surrounding this. It turned out Mike Leach was more right than wrong in that.
Yeah.
In that case. And I think he got unfairly targeted. The interesting thing about Mike Leach's personality is, I think part of the reason why it worked is because he was in out-of-the-way places. Could you imagine if Mike Leach was the coach at Michigan State? I mean, you think people wanted John L. out, man. They would have turned on Leach in a hurry.
It would have been fun, though. It would have been a lot of fun.
Oh, I would have enjoyed every minute of it.
That would have been fantastic, seeing Mike Leach with a big-time program like that. People were a little scared to hire him, but but I mean, he won games. He didn't always, you know, didn't always do things the way that people say they should be done. And, you know, there's the racial aspect of things, which is not good. But then at the same time, you know, the guy did win games, and, you know, the Mississippi State team, you know, is in a better place because of him. And I think the sad part is, I mean, just, you know, he was only 61.
It's sad. Incredible coach, remarkable person, belongs in the Football Hall of Fame.
Yes, definitely.
For sure. All right.
Yep.
Let's close out with fantasy football.
Speaking of sadness.
Speaking of sadness for one.
How surprised were you when you woke up today that you defeated me in fantasy football by 0.05 points?
Well, so that was the surprise. I actually thought I was going to win by a lot more.
I made some roster mistakes.
So did I. I mean, we both could have started better rosters than we did.
Yeah.
We both could have been. But what this game really came down to, DB, hold on, let me pull up the box score. Just so people understand how both simultaneously bad and good this game was.
It was like what this, it was like losing the game on a safety or something.
Well, it was like losing this game on a lateral.
Right.
What this game really came down to, DB, was Michael Gallup scoring two-tenths of a point and Alan Lazard scoring seven-tenths of a point.
Yeah, well, I was more surprised at your result than mine. My guy, I made the fatal error of listening to Yahoo on that one. Last time I ever do that. My gut told me to start Adam Thielen, but when that Colts game was going on with the Vikings, Adam Thielen had 0 points at halftime, and I felt very vindicated. I was like, oh, I made the right decision. Gallup's going to have a big day tomorrow. Thielen will do nothing. Well, Thielen ended up with some points, and you saw what happened.
Yes. Well, when I saw you had left both Thielen and Micah Parsons on the bench, I just, you know, I did a little victory dance. And this is before the games were even played.
Sag Mode dancing in his locker room. Well, and also, too, I should have known better. I have the Cincinnati defense lined up ready to go because of Tampa Bay's ineptness, and I should have left him there. That was a gut. You know, you go with your gut sometimes, and instead I started reading too much, and I was like, oh, it's going to be snowing in Buffalo. Well, that's bad for Miami. Okay, so I'm going to put Buffalo's defense in there. Bad move. You know, another just like bad coaching decisions. Not to say that – I'm not saying that that was the whole – you know, your team certainly, you know, you have some good players and you have a couple that didn't do as well. I was a little scared for you because there was one guy – I want to say it was one of your receivers, only had 5 points or something. And I was like, I thought he was going to do a lot better in that game.
Yeah, and Mark Andrews chipped in with a great 3 points. Thanks for nothing, second-round draft pick.
Well, that's the other thing. Lamar Jackson is out. And so, believe it or not, I had Ryan Tannehill lined up to be my quarterback. And then I was sitting there going, oh, he's really bad. But then I'm like, Aaron Rodgers is not Aaron Rodgers anymore. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to go with Aaron Rodgers. So that was
that was one thing that saved me. Which was the correct call. I mean, it was a coin flip on the Giants versus the Patriots defense. Turns out I should have started the Giants defense. I started the Patriots defense.
Yeah.
I would have picked up 6 extra points there. My big issue was Damian Pierce was out. He's injured. And he's been one of the players that was kind of a key component of my stretch run. I even changed my team name to Win One for Damian. and then after, Derek Carr just almost torched the New England defense. I almost changed the name to the Derek Carr Experience because last week I started Carr and he did just nothing. Fortunately, Justin Fields, came through for me on quarterback. But realistically, I mean, look, we both made some mistakes in terms of this. And you talk about worrying about Thielen, sitting on zeros. I cut the Tampa kicker and picked up the Minnesota kicker. I was like, ah, they're playing Indianapolis. They'll be fine. I look at halftime, like, what's going on?
Oh, that was an amazing comeback, and I didn't even realize that was an NFL record.
Yeah, and by the way, I have no idea why he tackled someone, but that tackle might have been the difference in the game.
Yes. Yeah.
That credited for a tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, also, too, when it was getting down to the end of that Rams-Packers game, the little green arrow was pointing towards me. You know, lie downs, 100% chance to win. And then, Green Bay got the ball, I think, at the Rams 2, and then they took knees. And that cost me yards. Rodgers minus zero. Rodgers minus zero. Rodgers minus zero. So there you go. But and there was another match too in our league that also, I believe, it involved our friend Bo, who lost by like a quarter of a point to somebody. I mean, it was very bizarre. But I think that just speaks to the whole NFL season. I mean, it's just, it's really kind of like, I mean, you still have your Patrick Mahomes and whatever
in the regular season.
Yeah. Well, my brother didn't even know he had a team. I think it made the playoffs. I said, did you know that you beat me? Like, he was very quiet about it. He usually says something about his team. And he started laughing. I didn't even know I had a team. Then he started, like, dropping people or whatever. And this was way into November. Thank you,
Yahoo Autograph knew what it was doing.
Yes. When I'm no longer on this earth, my team will probably still be playing.
Well, usually what happens, DB, is you beat me in the playoffs and you go on to the title game. That's usually the way this works.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I got a shot. Probably not, but maybe.
Right. Well, you're playing a tough team, but you never know what's going to happen in these games.
Never know.
The beauty of the fantasy world. Perhaps your time is now.
This Damian Pierce injury really wrecked my team. The Damian Pierce injury compared with the fact that Baltimore doesn't have anyone to throw Mark Andrews the ball is just a bad combination.
Yeah. Well, much like Coach Tucker, I will be sitting down with my staff and trying to figure out how we can be better in the off season.
And I will be sitting down with my staff and trying to come up with a different team name for this week.
I can't wait to see.
Spartan fans, you will appreciate the fact that for a good chunk of the year, my team name was, whoa, he has trouble with the snap.
I think we should have tweeted that at Hunter Dickinson after his thing today.
Yeah, I think so. But DB, it was an honor playing fantasy football with you this year. I'm sorry I had to be the person to take you out, but I appreciate your commissionerdom and the fact that you kept this league going. And yeah, it was a good season.
It's fun, and no, I don't take it personally because I have nothing to do with
it. All right. I think that's a good note to end things on. Well, on that note,
yes,
it's time for us to say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.